areas feeling colder in the wind. In northern Scotland, some light snow showers, but eastern Scotland will see more frequent snow showers, giving a few more centimetres here, an icy start to the day too, a high in Aberdeen of 3. On Sunday, snow gradually petering out from Northern Ireland, Wales, the Midlands and eastern England, but everywhere still bitterly cold for March, especially in the wind. That's the forecast. Back to Jim Lee.
Spring, eh? Thanks, Nick. Now on BBC Radio 4, the book of the week. In The World Until Yesterday, the Pulitzer Prize-winning author Jared Diamond explores the ways in which traditional societies can offer unique insights into human nature. Tonight, how adopting a traditional diet, low in salt in processed foods, could dramatically improve Western health and well-being. The reader is Crawford Logan.
When I began working in Papua New Guinea in 1964, the vast majority of the population still lived largely traditional lifestyles in their villages. Among the many things that impressed me about New Guineans was their physical condition: lean, muscular, physically active, all of them resembling slim Western bodybuilders. During those early years in New Guinea, I never saw a single obese or even overweight New Guinean. The non-communicable diseases that kill most first world citizens today, diabetes, stroke, heart attacks and cancers, were rare or unknown among traditional New Guineans living in rural areas. But already in 1964, the killers of first world citizens were beginning to make their appearance in New Guinea among those populations that had had the longest contact with Europeans. Today, that westernization of New Guinea diets, lifestyles, and health problems is in a phase of explosive growth. In cities, towns, and westernized environments, one commonly sees overweight or obese New Guineans. These changes that I have been watching unfold are just one example of the wave of epidemics of non-communicable diseases, NCDs, associated with the Western lifestyle and now sweeping the world. Major NCDs in the current wave include various cardiovascular diseases, heart attacks, strokes, and peripheral vascular diseases, the common form of diabetes, some forms of kidney disease, and some cancers such as stomach, breast, and lung cancers. The vast majority of us will die of one of these diseases. All of these NCDs are rare or absent among small-scale societies with traditional lifestyles. While the existence of some of these diseases is attested already in ancient texts, they became common in the West only within recent centuries. Of course, I'm not suggesting that we adopt a traditional lifestyle wholesale. Instead, our goal is to identify and adopt particular components of that lifestyle that protect us against non-communicable diseases. While a full answer will have to wait for more research, it's a safe bet that the answer will include traditional low-salt intake. Today, salt is cheap and is available in essentially unlimited quantities. Our body's main problem with salt is to get rid of it, which we do copiously in our urine and in our sweat. The average daily salt consumption around the world is about 9 to 12 grams. Traditionally, though, salt didn't come from salt shakers, but had somehow to be extracted from the environment. Our main problem with salt then was to acquire it rather than to get rid of it. That's because most plants contain very little sodium, yet animals require sodium at high concentrations in all their extracellular fluids. As a result, while carnivores readily obtain their needed sodium by eating herbivores full of extracellular sodium, herbivores themselves face problems in obtaining that sodium. That's why the animals that you see coming to salt licks are deer and antelope, not lions and tigers. For dozens of traditional hunter-gatherers whose daily salt intake has been calculated, it falls below 3 grams. The lowest recorded value is for Brazil's Yanomamo Indians, whose staple food is low-sodium bananas and who excrete on the average only 50 milligrams of salt daily, about 1/200th of the salt excretion of the typical American. A single Big Mac hamburger analyzed by Consumer Reports contained 1.5 grams of salt, representing 1 month's salt intake for a Yanomamo. As a result of the relatively recent adoption of a high-salt diet by our still largely traditional bodies adapted to a low-salt diet, high salt intake is a risk factor for almost all of our modern non-communicable diseases. Many of the damaging effects of salt are mediated by its role in raising blood pressure. High blood pressure is among the major risk factors for cardiovascular diseases in general and for strokes, congestive heart disease, coronary artery disease, and myocardial infarcts in particular, as well as for type 2 diabetes and kidney disease. In at least four countries notorious for high average levels of salt consumption and resulting stroke deaths, China, Finland, Japan, and Portugal, government public health campaigns that lasted years or decades achieved local or national reductions in blood pressure and in stroke mortality. For instance, a 20-year campaign in Finland to reduce salt intake succeeded in lowering average blood pressure and thereby cut 75 or 80% off of deaths from stroke and coronary heart disease and added 5 or 6 years to Finnish life expectancies. If by now you're convinced that it would be healthy for you to decrease your salt intake, how can you go about it? Only about 12% of our salt intake is added in the home and with our knowledge, either by whoever is cooking or by the individual consumer at the table. The next 12% is salt naturally present in the food when it's fresh. Unfortunately, the remaining 75% of our salt intake is hidden. It comes already added by others to food that we buy, either processed food or else restaurant food to which the manufacturer or the restaurant cook, respectively, added the salt. As a result, Americans and Europeans have no idea how high is their daily salt intake unless they subject themselves to 24-hour urine collections. Abstaining from the use of salt shakers doesn't suffice to lower drastically your salt intake. You also have to be informed about selecting the foods that you buy and the restaurants in which you eat. Processed foods contain quantities of salt impressively greater than the quantities in the corresponding unprocessed foods. For instance, compared to fresh, unsalted, steamed salmon, tinned salmon contains 5 times more salt per pound, and store-bought smoked salmon contains 12 times more. Why do manufacturers of processed foods add so much salt? One reason is that it's a nearly costless way to make cheap, unpalatable foods edible. Another reason is that increasing the salt content of meat increases the weight of water bound in meat, so the final product weight can cheaply be increased 20% by bound water. Are we citizens of industrial nations thus helpless pawns in the hands of food manufacturers? And is there little that we can do to lower our salt intake and blood pressure except to pray for an effective government anti-salt campaign? Actually, there is a big step that you can take besides avoiding use of salt shakers. You can eat a healthy diet, high in fresh foods and low in processed foods. We've seen that NCDs are overwhelmingly the leading causes of death in westernized societies. Nor is it the case that you'll have a wonderful, carefree, healthy life until you suddenly drop dead of an NCD at age 78 to 81, the average lifespan in long-lived Western societies. NCDs are also major causes of declining health and decreased quality of life for years or decades before they eventually kill you. But the same NCDs are virtually non-existent in traditional societies. What clearer proof could there be that we have much to learn from them of life and death value? The world of yesterday shaped our genes, culture, and behavior for most of the history of behaviorally modern Homo sapiens who arose between 60,000 and 100,000 years ago. As deduced from the archaeological record, changes in lifestyle and in technology unfolded extremely slowly until they began to accelerate with the earliest origins of agriculture around 11,000 years ago. The oldest state governments arose only around 5,400 years ago. That means that the ancestors of all of us alive today were still living in yesterday's world until 11,000 years ago, and that the ancestors of many of us were still doing so much more recently. Some of what yesterday's world teaches us is to be grateful for our modern societies and not to badmouth them across the board. Almost all of us would say good riddance to chronic warfare, infanticide, and abandoning the elderly. We understand why small-scale societies often have to do those cruel things or get trapped into doing them. Fortunately, though, with state governments, we're not necessarily trapped in war cycles, and with sedentary lifestyles and food surpluses, we're not forced to practice infanticide and abandonment of the elderly. We would also say good riddance to the strangling of widows and to other cruelties that certain traditional societies practice as cultural idiosyncrasies. But there are other features of yesterday's world that, instead of horrifying us, are likely to appeal. Some of those features, such as not sprinkling salt on our food at the dinner table, are ones that we can easily incorporate into our individual lives, regardless of whether our whole society also adopts them. Other features that we admire will be harder for us to adopt individually if the society around us doesn't also change. It's hard to raise our children like New Guinea children when all other children around them are being raised like modern Western children. Still, other decisions to adopt features of traditional societies require action by our society as a whole. Diet and eating habits are an area in which there is a lot that we can do as individuals to help ourselves. Think again about the startling fact that virtually no traditional New Guineans die of stroke, diabetes, or heart attacks. The societies to which we and the First World belong represent a narrow slice of human cultural diversity. Societies from that slice achieved world dominance not because of a general superiority, but for specific reasons. Their technological, political, and military advantages derived from their early origins of agriculture, due in turn to their productive local, wild, domesticable plant and animal species. Despite those particular advantages, modern industrial societies didn't also develop superior approaches to raising children, treating the elderly, settling disputes, avoiding non-communicable diseases, and other societal problems. Thousands of traditional societies developed a wide array of different approaches to those problems. On the long plane flight home from New Guinea, I used the time to transcribe my field notes, relive daily events of my months in the jungle, and remain mentally in New Guinea. The emotional transition begins with the reunion with my family waiting outside baggage reclaim, and my confrontation with piles of accumulated mail and emails on my desk. Returning to urban life in the West means returning to time pressures, schedules, and stress. Just the thought of it raises my pulse rate and my blood pressure. In New Guinea jungle, there is no time pressure, no schedule. If it's not raining, I walk out of camp each day before dawn to listen to the last night bird songs and the first morning bird songs. But if it's raining, I sit in camp waiting for the rain to stop. Who knows when that will be? My own outlook on life has been transformed and enriched by my years among one set of traditional societies, that of New Guinea. After 50 years of commuting between my home in the United States and New Guinea, I've worked out my compromises and found my peace. Emotionally, I still spend much of my time and thoughts in New Guinea, even when I'm physically in the US. New Guinea's intensity would be hard to shake off, even if I wanted to do so, which I don't. Being in New Guinea is like seeing the world briefly in vivid colors, when by comparison, the world elsewhere is grey.
Crawford Logan was reading The World Until Yesterday by Jared Diamond. The book was abridged by Robin Brooks and produced by Kirstine Cameron. BBC Radio 4. Now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 today, Saturday the 23rd of March. There are warnings of gales in Viking, South Utsira, Forties, Cromarty, Forth, Tyne, Dogger, Fisher, German Bight, Humber, Thames, Dover, Fitzroy, Sole, Irish Sea, Shannon, Rockall, Malin, Hebrides, Bailey, Fair Isle, Faroes and South East Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800. Low just west of Sole, 974, expected 230 miles west of Shannon, 984 by 1800 Saturday. New low expected southeast Fitzroy, 998 by the same time. The area forecast for the next 24 hours, Viking. Southeasterly 5 to 7, occasionally gale 8 at first in southwest, decreasing 3 or 4 in northeast. Snow showers, good, occasionally poor.